I'm giving on the bays. The question of Akko Atzma Mahi. That's what we're up to. What is the din with Akko? Okay. Racha by Yaakov b'shem Rabbi Yimi, and train of Odi the Rebbe. There were two follow, we're going to quote two different Maisalach. And on the Alfin Rako, Yeshua Meretz Yisrael, Yeshua Puzlars. From these stories, we can derive that it was partially in Eretz Yisrael, partially out. And now we're on Mandala Man Aleph, Rebbe Havi Ba'ako. Rebbe was in Akko. Chamsun Akkon Pita Nikia. So he saw the residents eating the white bread. So the problem was that if it was white, in order for it to be white, they had to wash the wheat, and then the wheat was mukshal kabal tuma. So he was wondering how could they, you know, eat the bread. Exactly what the problem is. What's the problem? I guess because you have to be makbid not to be, like we keep saying, you know, not to be matame even chulin, right? On the line, so Rabbi said to them, Matan Lawson, what liquid do you use when washing the wheat? On the line, they said to him, Tamanachad Walakanda was a student over here, came. Harlono, the Alme Beitzim, Shein Makshirim. He said that the egg water is not makshir. So, you know what we did. Anan Shalkan Bayin, Velosim Bayin. So we boiled eggs in water, and we used that water from the boiled eggs. that's egg water, right? So we use that to make the bread. So
I thought he meant the liquid from the
egg. That's what he meant. Sovereign Maymar, they thought when he said egg water, he thought may shalak shall bait him. It was the water in which eggs are boiled. For lo amra may bait some atzma. What he meant was the water, he meant the egg yolks. But because the Talmud didn't make himself clear, so they made a mistake and made bread that could easily become tamei. It was a mistaken, it wasn't a clear shear that he gave that day, right?
Yeah, but to make dough, don't you have to mix water into the flour anyways?
Apparently not. You can make egg challah without any water, or you can make it with, I guess you can make it with grape juice or something, if you need some liquid. Yeah, so
I thought he meant the egg whites, which is much.
Well, maybe he meant egg whites. You know, I'm not going to get involved in that question. You know, if you're a baker and you want to get involved in this, gesundheit, go experiment. at any rate, what's the point of it is? What do you see from the story? You see from the story that he was concerned about them eating betumo, and they were also concerned. They had a lesson that taught them how to make bread in a way in which it would not be makabel tuma. They misunderstood the lesson, but al kolponim, you see that it was a concern, which means that Akko is part of Eretz Yisrael, because if it was chutz la'aretz, there would be no concern about eating chulin betuma. That's story number one. Story number two, on Rabbi Yaakov Aridi, may Oysa Shaw. This is actually a sidebar. Actually, this is not the story. That Mary says, "Shaw." From that moment on, Gosher Shlei Hitamad Mayra Hayroya, that a student shouldn't be passing halachas. 7, it says, unless he obtains authorization from his teacher first. Mm-hmm. In this way, no one will say, no one will render decisions until his teacher has ascertained that he speaks clearly. So, in other words, smicha mechina is not just to ascertain that you know your daya. But you also have to ascertain that you know how to speak. If you don't know how to speak, you're not clear, you shouldn't be given smicha. That's clear from here. The Rivash says this is the source for what's called smicha today. How about that? Let's see, what else does he say? A Torah scholar should know how to express himself articulately in writing, so he may answer halakha queries with responsa written as befits a Torah scholar. Okay.
Where's
that Rivash? That's the Yom Shel Shlomo. The Rivash? Rivash is 271. Number 7. Yeah. There's one more here which is very interesting. It's number 7. Let's see. Did I do this right? Yeah. So number... No, I'm sorry. Number 8. Rav Chiya b'shem Rav Huna, Talmud Shahira afilu kahalacha in harasa haraya. The next step is even more remarkable. That even if he gets it right, but he didn't, I guess, get the right permission. Welcome.
Thank you.
We're talking about a Talmud that's Moira Halacha, and it's not clear, so that's why we have smicha, so we can make sure that the Talmud speaks clearly. And now we're talking about if he's hara afilu kahalacha ein harasa haraya. It's not even though he gets the facts right, it's not a good psak. So in number 8 he brings a Ramah here. It says gittin and chalitzis of a scholar who was not authorized to deal with them are not considered valid. That means they're treated stringently in every respect, whatever. The Rivash disagrees, ruling that if a scholar conducted the get possesses the requisite expertise, the lack of formal certification would not invalidate it. But he says you can follow this Rivash if you have no choice. Mari Weil's ruling is in consonance with our Gemara. Rivash may hold the Babli disagrees. And I had heard that there was a takana long ago because of the stories with Bachran being Mekadesh Bachrot as a joke or just fooling around, and it became big, major problems in halacha because maybe there was two eidim, maybe it wasn't a joke, you know, and it became a whole thing. So they made the takana, anybody who makes Kedushin without the rav of the shtat there, it's disqualified at the get-go. That's what I thought I remember. And I thought this was going to refer to that, but it looks like this is maybe a different topic. Anyway, Tony. Talmud shar halacha b'thnei rabbi chayv misa. If he does it in front of his rabbi, he's chayv misa. That's misa b'dei shemayim, obviously. Again, Tony b'shem rav Lazar. L'meisun av aviv al shar halacha b'thnei Moshe Rabban. They paskin a halacha in front of Moshe Rabbeinu. What was the halacha that none of the people paskin? You remember? See Leviticus 10:1-7. The eighth day of the service in the Mishkan, they were put to death after they offered a zara, a shalot tziva. The fire that burned on the outer altar was miraculous. Came down from heaven, and in early generations it consumed all the offerings by itself. It was not necessary to add any wood. Nevertheless, the Torah says it's a mitzvah to bring fire from ordinary sources. There's a mitzvah to bring your own wood. So the sons of Aaron, the Kohen, shall place a fire upon the altar. So none of the view arrived at the correct conclusion on their own. But they were punished because they paskened this in front of Moshe Rabbeinu, which they were not allowed to do. Now, over here, there's a whole thing over here at number 9 about what kind of a Talmud are we talking about? If I paskin in front of Rabbi Marwick, am I kind of Misa? So it says over here, no. Whew, it was a close call. The Bryce is discussing a teacher who was the disciple, who's the disciple's Rav Muvak. Rav Muvak Saba, okay? That's your primary teacher from whom you learn most of his Torah knowledge. That's what it says here. It's very interesting. You know, I went to the Shulchan Aruch and to Siman Reish Mem Beis. And I just want to read you over here something interesting it says over here. So it says, Asa la Adam la Horus la Thay Rabo la Olam, v'cholamor la Fon of Chaim Misa. You can never pass it. But, and the Ramah says, Afilu natilas v'shus la Mahani, toch shalosh parsos. If you're within your base meal, you can't paskin even if you have rishus. Imhu Rabbi Mubak. Now, later on in the Siman, he says, in Sif Yud Beis, he says, the Ramah says this, Haimuv Hakim lo mairi chishah Rabbi Mubak, sherov hakmasa mimenu. This doesn't mean that. Shtim kein lo efshali yos lo harbi rabosav of Hakim. It says that It's in the Machaber. It says unless you took Rishus from all your Rebbe Muvaks. So if a Rebbe Muvak means you have multiple Rebbe Muvaks, if a Rebbe Muvak means you have Rov Chavos on Mimeno, you couldn't have more than one, obviously, unless you have multiple personalities. But I'm of Hakam, right? So he says, Slafuke Tom Chavar. Okay, Sheneskadal, Betara, Venasa Chavar, Larabai Hanashu Karlius, Okrav. Okay, whatever. I just found it interesting. Muvak might not be what it means all over. There's questions as to what it means. But over here in English, he's trying to say he learned most of his Torah knowledge from him. Now, what's it mean in the presence? Does it mean physically in front of him? Rashba writes, it's only if he's mamish in front of him. If he's within 12 mil, then even though it's awesome for him to do so, only chayv misa. And Tosfos Nerevin says, no, anywhere within 12 mil is chayv misa. Okay, so this is a big sugya over here about being paskin in front of your Rebbe. Okay, next. So, we're in the middle of this story. Ma'isa b'talmud echad shehar lifnei Rebbe Elazar Rabbo. So there was a story where it was a Talmud who went ahead and crossed the line, so to speak. Amar li ima shalom ishto, so Rebbe Elazar said to ima shalom, that was his wife's name, you know what, that's a good name to name your wife if you want to have shalom bias. You say ima shalom bias. Okay. Any yotze shabbato, this guy won't even last the week. Ulo yotze shabbato at shemes, and he died that week. Talmidim said, Rebbe, Daviato, are you a prophet? You know when people are going to die. Amar lehen, he said, Lenavi ani v'laban, Navi anarki. I'm neither one. Ela kachni mekubal, she called Talmud Amar halach with the Rabbi Chai Misa. So that's how I knew it.
So if he said it to his wife, how did this Talmidim hear?
They were in the same room.
So the way I insert the story, he told his wife, it's not something he would advertise to the world. He's not going to go around saying, you're dead. That's not the way a Talmud Chacham behaves. But when he came home, he privately told his wife, you know what, I had a ma'isa today. Someone had told me this, that it's actually brought down some tshuvas for him. And if someone has something that's really bothering him, is he allowed to tell his wife? In other words, maybe Lashon Hara, you know. But your wife, if something's really bothering you, you can unload on your wife, because that's okay. You're still good. Goofy. Or the other way around. Whatever. That's what I heard. Whether it's true or not, what I heard, I don't know. I'm just telling you, this is the way I put the story. So he came home. He tells his wife, you know, there was this Talmud he was passing in front of me. I don't think he's going to make it. And then that, a couple days later, the Talmud Taka dies. So what do you think the wife's going to say? She's going to go to the Talmidim. You want to know something? Your Rebbe, what a great man he is. He told me he was going to die. And then they heard, and that's the rest of the story. Okay. Tony, Asr l'tam l'har s'alachim t'li rabo, again it's Asr. Achei rachim menu shnei Asr mil, k'machan Yisrael, that was the size of Machan Yisrael. Ma'atam, how do you know that that's how big Machan Yisrael was? Because the Pasuk says, v'yachim ala yadim b'es ha'yishimos ad avon ha'shitim, that this is the location, and k'amahein shnei Asr mil, k'ador tachim marchi b'chefer, he was in chefer, v'avon shalom lay. They asked him, and he paskened. They asked him halacha questions, he paskened. Shalom Lei Bumora, he didn't ask him more questions. He'd keep going, he'd keep paskening. Amulei, so the people said to him, some people said to him, Lochein Ilfon Rebbe, didn't you teach us? Right, speaking to him in the third person. Also, a Talmud Lohiris halacha Lei Rabbi, actually, Racha, Kemeno, Shemos, and Milbach Israel. Reb Mona Rabach Yosef Bitziporin. Your Rebbe, Reb Mona, is sitting over here in Tziporin, which is within 12 mil of where we are. Reb Tamfan said, "Oh, Yesi, I lied. The Loyodas, may evil befall me if I'm lying when I say I didn't know. I had no idea. I don't know whether he didn't know he was there or he didn't know it was within 12 mil. I'm not sure what it was he didn't know. But I mean, he shot the Lariath, and then from that moment on, he stopped paskening anymore." That's the way it goes. That's the story. Now, the Gemara now is going back to the discussion about Akko. So we had the first story that proved that it was partly in Eretz Yisrael because they were Machmen on Tumah. Now we got a second story, which we've never come back to. Rebbe Abba Akko, here's the second story. Rebbe was in Akko. So he saw a certain person going up from the rock to higher ground. So the place he was going to was across the border of Eretz Yisrael. He was going to hit Chutz Laretz, and this guy was a Kohen, as we're going to see in the story, and if he's going to Chutz Laretz, he's going to Tumas Eretz Ha'amimim, and so Rebbe's getting all upset at this guy. He says to him, Amalei, let's not braid the Palan Pano, aren't you the son of so-and-so as a Kohen? Lava of a Kohen, you're a Kohen, you're not allowed to be Matama yourself. Amalei, and if Shalava Ha'igvayis, my father's eyes were raised. It means that he was looking where he shouldn't be looking. He married a woman who was unfit for him, meaning like, let's say, a grusha. He married someone he was not allowed to marry. V'chil is also ha'ish, and he was machal, that person. There's a great footnote here, which you got to see.
He was a whole.
44a2 on the bottom, note 19. It says, he went astray after his eyes, choosing beauty over duty.
Beauty over duty.
What do you think about that? That came straight from art school, man. I couldn't make it up. Anyway, so that what's the point here? What's the point of this story?
Part of
Akko was outside because he's going to higher ground, wherever that was, in Akko, and that was Chutz Laretz. And part of Akko we saw before, they were marked on Tum and Taira. So you see that it's partially in and partially out. That's what the moral of the story is. So that's the end of that. So all this was to answer the question that we started the day off with, is what was the question on 43B at the bottom? What was the line? That line? Akko atzmo mahi. So that was the question we started with. What was Akko itself? We went through these two stories to prove what it was. We had an interlude with Moira Halacha of Neirabo, and now we're into another sugya. This has a large introduction, which I'm not going to have time to read to you, but this is called the Braisa of Tchumin. So it goes through the parts of Eretz Yisrael to make up all the bubble borders. And let's see here.
The maps on 44B1.
The mitzvahs depend on the land applied to the greatest extent possible on these borders. That means that there is an Isser Shvias and there's an Isser Abir after the Zman as well. That's what we said. Shal Sharatsis Labir. So we said that. What else do you want to point out here? He makes a point that there are a lot of people that like that. I know when I went to Eretz Yisrael, the guide was always telling us about how we identify the cities based on the Arabic names. And the Arabic names are very similar or related to the biblical names, and that's how they can identify when some city is the biblical city. But he says, he brings down from many poskim that you cannot rely on that Lakula. In other words, if they have Arabic names which indicate that this will be a city outside of Yisrael, and there's not a chazaka that it's outside of Yisrael, you can't just rely on that proof alone. But it's...
Who says that?
That's in the footnotes. I have here... Let's see here. There's a fundamental, let's look at number two, just to read it real quick. There's a fundamental disagreement between the commentaries as to what the Braisa of Tchumen is teaching us. In Rash Cirilo's view, the Braisa appears to be sketching the boundaries, naming the places that stand on the border of the Oli Bava. Okay, and Armas Kodesh maintains that these cities are above the northern border of Oli Bava, are actually in Oli Mitzrayim territory. Admas Kodesh maintains that there are a total of 16 cities that were sanctified themselves, but are not surrounded by sanctified land. So it's very interesting. This is the first time I ever heard of this. You could have a city which had Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, but the land that surrounded the city was Chutz Laretz. So it's like it wasn't contiguous. The Eretz Yisrael land was not necessarily contiguous in terms of its Kedusha. I never heard of that before.
Next sentence.
The Oile, it makes sense?
The next sentence, yeah.
The Oile Bavel left the territory in between, unsanctified, for the benefit of the poor during Shvias. Okay. He says that there are 15 varying versions of this Braisa that are described more in the back. That's about all I'm going to talk about here, I guess. Yeah, that's it for now. Okay, now I'm not gonna go through every single city trying to identify where it is in the map, and that you have to do that on your own. There's just no time. Okay, and that's as follows. Now we're on 44b. We're going to read. I'm just going to read it. I'm not going to spend any time on this. Parshas Chaimas, Lidol Shir, Shid, Shina Dror, Shura Da'ako, Tziriya Da'galila, Kivrasa, Bez Nisa, Kuvaya, Nosa Dekhir, Vorai Rabsa, Tafnes, Sanfata, Machata Diyater, Mamsai Da'avosa, Rosh Megaton. These are different places. I started putting down numbers of the notes next to the cities, trying to trace it, but I gave up.
The only Bumble territory is pretty much the entire Israel today.
Yeah,
it's actually missing Gaza, but
yes. Gatun Atzma, Mesfar, Marcheshes, Migdochorov, Ulam Rabsa, Nukvus of the Ion, Sukras, Kakarabba de Varsangara, Senegal, Yelad the Wild and Kesrin, Fakhanda de Visakam, Mubaisum, Lak the Zakai, Nimrin Bay Sakal Knos, Rafiak the Chagra, Darah Hagdol of Halak, Slamidvar, Kesrin, Yavka, Menachal, Zeret, Yar Sadusa, Rek and the Goa, Veganaya, the Ashbor. So those were the places. And the footnotes go through each one of these and tries to identify where they are. Now, the Gemara asks, Ashkelon Atzma, what's the din with Ashkelon itself? It says the gardens of Ashkelon, 35, but not Ashkelon itself. Okay, so the Gemara says, is Ashkelon itself in or out of Eretz Yisrael? So the Gemara says, Reb Yaakov bar Acha b'shem Reb Ze'era. So he wants to prove it, Minmad the tongue is a brisa. Ganaya da Ashkelon, the gardens, are on the border of the territory by Ezra. Hadol Amra Ashkelon Kolchutz. So that obviously is mashma that it's Ashkelon itself is outside of that territory. Rabbi Simon Rishem Chilfai, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yosef Ben Kafar Nimnu Al Ashkelon B'Tiaru. They erase the word Avir. That's a whole tumult exactly why, but whatever it is. Because it could be that there's two halachas in when it comes to Tumas Eretz Ha'amim, there's the dirt of the Eretz Ha'amim, and then there's the avir of the Eretz Ha'amim. So what's it say over here? So it says Nimnu, they took count, right? So they voted on, is Ashkelon, the city on the border of Eretz Yisrael, should be considered Tomei like all Chutz La'aretz, or should be Tahar like Eretz Yisrael? So in response, in response to the practice of the surrounding nations to bury their dead in any place, not just in cemeteries, so that's why there was this Gzeira of Tumas Eretz Ha'amim, right? Now, initially the decree was directed only at the earth, because it was feared that a clump of earth might contain a etzem kesara, barley-sized bone, etzem kesara, right? But 80 years prior to the destruction of the temple, the decree was extended to include airspace over the lands outside Eretz Yisrael, possibly to discourage people from leaving Eretz Yisrael. If someone entered the airspace, even if they didn't touch the ground, like he was traveling in a wagon, then he would, under the extended rule, become tamei. Accordingly, it would seem that when the text of Ari Yerushalmi says that the three Tanaim voted on the airspace, they were deciding on the Tumah status of the airspace alone, but that the earth would remain Tumah. And that's indeed the Marafolda and others who say that. But the Rash says that no, there's no foreign land Tumah in Ashkelon at all, both air and earth, and that's why in our Gersos, they've taken out the word avir. So that's the background behind that. So again, we're asking, what is the din with Ashkelon? We said Ashkelon's kelchutz. Then we had a conference regarding Ashkelon's status. They had a count, and they declared it tahar. Yepira Pinchas ben Yoyer, Shomer Yordan Hayinu Lisiv Kishalashkan. This psak to say that it was tar is based on the story with Pinchas ben Yoyer. He said, and Pinchas ben Yoyer, by the way, was a Kohen. So he said that when he was a child, maybe, he used to go down to the Arab farm market in Ashkelon, and loike chetim, we would buy some wheat, boil in the uranium, come back to town. The Tovlin, they used to go to the mikvah because of maybe of the roke of an amaretz. It has nothing to do with the tumasanim. But ochlin the tumasanim, and then we'd eat the tumah. So you see that Ashkelon itself was not tummy, because otherwise they wouldn't have been able to walk down there. Mm-hmm. So that's the basis of the Nimnu. That was what they got together and decided on this based on this story. Lamacha, then the next day, Nimnu Olel Lepaitrim Namaisus. Now they're going ahead and they're saying that Ashkelon, if something grows in Ashkelon, it'll be part of Hamaisus. Now we just said that it's part of Eretz Yisrael. The next day they're turning around and saying that it's part of Hamaisus. So the footnote's very careful to point out they're not changing their mind here. 45. They're not ruling Ashkelon was within Adli Bava borders and fully Eretz Yisrael. The Brayse of Tchumen clearly leaves Ashkelon outside the Adli Bava. However, the boundary runs in such a way that Ashkelon and its nearby villages are surrounded. Because of this, enjoys the same status of Eretz Yisrael regarding Tumah. So 45 is what I was supposed to read. This was not a retraction of the earlier decision. Indeed, it was a second conclusion resulting from the testimony of Rabbi Chaim in Yoyer. When he said he used to go to Ashkelon to buy wheat, he was speaking of going during Shvius. He bought wheat there without any concern that he was doing business with Shvius produce, which would obviously be also as lachal lo l'schayra. So that's one shot. So that's the idea here, that they were nimna to say that it was part of Hamaisras, meaning the stuff that grows there is not subject to the Kedushas Eretz Yisrael.
It's
not. We're saying two things. We're saying, right?
If you can eat the truma, then how is it possible for myself not being?
One second. So what did I say in 44, which I read a little too quickly? So we're saying, we first said that Ashkelon, we had a diuk from the Braisa because it said that the gardens of Ashkelon were part of the of Oilu Bava, which we were medayik from, but the Ashkelon itself was not part of Eretz Yisrael. So from that we were medayik, it was outside Eretz Yisrael. Then we turned around and we had a discussion about whether it was Tahar or Tameh. And we said that it's Tahar because we saw Pinchas ben Yoyer went in there to buy wheat. Right? So it must be that it's Tahar. But that does not mean that it's in the Oli Bava borders. That's what 44 is telling me. The Braisa leaves Ashkelon outside the Oli Bava territory, but the boundary runs in such a way that Ashkelon and its nearby villages are surrounded by Eretz Yisrael. So it enjoys the same status of Eretz Yisrael regarding Tumah. So it could be Chutz La'aretz, but not be included in the Gzeira of Tumas Eretz Ha'am. That seems to be what we're getting out of this story. And the Mahar, they said there was Prata from Maestras. I don't know why he has to speak out that it's a retraction of the earlier decision, because we're saying that it was not part of Eretz Yisrael. But he's saying that it is a second conclusion, saying that he went there during Shvius and he wasn't worried about buying Peres Shvius. Alternatively, what's the second thing? He did not have to separate Maestras. Either of these practices shows it that it's Chutz La'aretz, or at least outside the Oli Bava, exempt from the Kedushas Ha'aretz. It's only the status of Tara that Ashkelon is akin to Eretz Yisrael for the reason set forth in the previous note. Okay. Fine. So, Moshach Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi Es Yodav Shohim Estanach Al Ben HaKapar. So, Rabbi Yishmael Rabbi Yossi was not happy with this sock. And he kind of like wanted to show his displeasure with it by taking his hands off Ben Kapra, who he was usually leaning on, because he wanted to indicate to him he should also think this over. Omolo Bani. So Rabbi Yishmael said to Ben Kapra, Omolo Martoli, why did you not say to me before, the Imam or Shakta Shadakimani, why did you take my hands off of me? If you would have asked me that, you know, it's like, why aren't you interested in what I do, you know? If you would have asked me, I would have told you the following. Esmol, yesterday, I agreed to say Ashkelon was Tahar. Anihu Shatimesi, Anihu Shatiati. I'm the one who first said it was Tamei, but then I turned around and changed my mind and said it was Tahar, because the Tumas Eretz Ha'amim is Drabanan. I can make the decision one way or the other. I can change my mind. But Ashav, but now we're not discussing something which is Drabanan. Now we're discussing whether something is Chayim and Truvas and Maestros, which is a Shaila D'Oraisa. So I can't change my mind and decide, oh, before I said it was Chayiv, and now I'm saying it's Potter from Truvas and Maestros. Shemo Niskavsho Midvar Torah, 49. Perhaps Oli Bovel did take possession of Ashkelon. Perhaps they took possession of other areas, but thereby became obligated biblically in the Truma and Maestros of Ashkelon as if they had conquered it. So he's concerned about this. So in other words, so how can I patter from Dvar Torah? In other words, if you're talking about Trumas and Maestros, you don't have this option of saying that it's not from Eretz Yisrael. That's what we'll stop for now. Thank you.